the 2015 Public Service Champions of Change Forum will take place on Thursday, April 30th at 7 p.m. You will meet financial reform guru Barney Frank, co-author of the Dodd-Frank Bill, and other experts on climate sustainability, income equality, healthcare reform, and civil rights, on the role of the true public servant. This special event is sponsored by WBAI supporter, the New York Society for Ethical Culture. For ticket information, go to nysec.org. That's the 2015 Public Service Champion of Change Forum, April 30th, 7 p.m. For information, go to nysec.org.
Have you ever wondered if telepathy is possible? What about mind control? Michi Okaku explores these questions and the phenomena of consciousness in his New York Times best-selling book, The Future of the Mind.
During the month of April, you can receive this book as our thank you gift for a donation of just $65.
Read and learn as Dr. Kaku tackles the most fascinating object in the known universe, the human brain. You can join him on this venture in The Future of the Mind, your gift from us for a $65 donation this month.
You can listen to Kaku on WBAI's Explorations every Wednesday night at 9. Donate today by calling 212-209-2950 or go to givetowbai.org. Again, you can call 212-209-2950 or go to givetowbai.org.
I'm Rosie Perez, and this is WBAI, listener-supported non-commercial radio in New York.
Come join us, Alan Seinfeld and myself, the Mob, as we co-host the 9th annual World Peace Earth Day celebration, Thursday, April 23rd, from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. A conscious community gathering with 7 world leaders having a panel discussion. There will be indigenous ceremonies, live performances, and community participation. That's Thursday, April 23rd from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. at St. John's Lutheran Church, 81 Christopher Street near 7th Avenue. Doors open at 6 p.m. with a 6:30 pre-show. For tickets and info, go to www.planetheart.org. That's www.planetheart.org. Or email info@planetheart.org. Come on down.
Joy of resistance. We're sisters of the joy of resistance.
There is a lot at stake for women around the world as the new Greek left government of Syriza challenges the European Union on austerity. Under austerity, women take the biggest hit and must compensate for the end of public services with their unpaid labor. On Thursday, April 23rd, 9 to 10 p.m., join the Joy of Resistance as we speak with Elena Saraya, a member of the Greek Parliament, on the feminist stake in Syriza and the rebellion in Europe. We'll also speak with Erin Mattson, a blogger and former Action Vice President of the National Organization for Women, on Hillary Clinton's actual record on reproductive rights. That's Thursday, April 23rd, 9 to 10 p.m., Joy of Resistance, women's history unfolding before our eyes.
Husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy.
What's going on with the weather forecasting? What's the National Weather Service really like? What's happened to our weather satellites? Tune in to Ken Gale's Ecologic with meteorologist Time Weissmuller and author Catherine Miles to find out. Tuesday, April 28th at 8 p.m. right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
We'll be right back. Good morning.
This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and, yes, the imagination. Use it. My name is Jim Frank. With us this morning, at long last, is Lizard.
Lips.
That is Dar Williams. I mean, Pink Floyd, talk about a good cover. That's the way you do a cover, folks. This is WBAI, New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. And the program is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. I will do an intro, but I need to talk about some other things before you all meet Celeste Rita Baker. But I met Celeste Rita Baker, we think, in about 2006?
Yes.
About 9 years ago?
Yes.
This is going to segue perfectly. All due to the shenanigans of a woman by the name of Cherie Renee Thomas.
Yay!
And so put a footnote on the name Celeste Rita Baker, because I have to talk about Cherie for a moment. Okay. And how am I going to do that? Oh, God, these are going to be threads. Mm. Okay? Last night, at the Future Studios of WBAI on the third floor, I hope you all see when I'm pointing and doing the finger wiggles and stuff. I hope you're paying close attention to your radio. We had a New York Review of Science Fiction reading, which is right for Smith Celeste. And it was Samuel Ray Delaney, and Sam Joshua Miller. Now, mind you, that between Cherie Renee Thomas and Samuel R. Delaney and Sam J. Miller, and coming up also N.K. Jemison. Actually, Nora is the only one. I don't know what the K stands for. Oh, do you?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, so we'll keep that a secret.
Yeah, I wouldn't tell.
We'll keep that a secret. So the point is, you got to have three names. Do that series. Let me tell you, the last time we did an event at 388 Atlantic Avenue was for Delia Sherman and Ellen Kushner, and it was delightful. The room was just basically four walls and a couple of lights and a lot of heavy-to-move chairs. Walked in last night, I knew that there was going to be some kind of renovation, and oh, my bleeping, that's an acceptable word, God.
Bleeping.
Bleeping, yeah. Oh, my bleeping God. It was amazing. It was just amazing. Gorgeous lighting, nice cafe tables with a nice cafe.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still learning their ways. That was only a small part of it. A little room off to the side, and you go in, there's a professional TV mixing studio. There are three robotic cameras in that space. And I brought with me a guy who usually, a frequent guest on this program, a good friend of mine, who I met through Cherie Renee Thomas, she who was the gateway to all cool things. Terrence Taylor, when he's not writing his vampire novels, and he's not writing his vampire novel, he's written two out of three books, and you need to get that third book out, Terrence. I mean, really. He's a good writer. He's a really good writer. Lovely guy. He goes in, and he sees this mixing studio for the three robotic cameras, and he just goes, "Candy!" We had under an hour. He mixed. He did a video mix of the event that, if it had been rehearsed, would have been only slightly better. And the biggest problem there was the sound, which is something that we're going to address by next week. I'll get to next week in a moment. And how do you know I'm telling the truth? It's still online. You go to livestream.com And you look for NYRSF, New York Review of Science Fiction Reading, Miller Delaney, and you click on it, and you can watch all of last night's event. May I suggest that you skip the first 15 minutes where we're all walking around and talking to each other, and then you can skip the intermission and the raffle, but pay attention to Sam Miller and Samuel R. Delaney, and pay special attention to the incredible mixing job that, without any training on this particular equipment, mm-hmm. Terrence Taylor did. And this is going to be a thing. We are going to keep those readings up. This doesn't stop you, the listener, from being yours. It is still incumbent upon you to attend these readings. You know, because we're not going to do it to an empty room. We're doing this for you. You show up and then you can watch it again. The fact that these things are available online, that's for people in Europe and Indonesia and Africa and where
Virgin Islands.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But if you're a New Yorker or even a Philadelphia-er, if you're within shouting distance or you have to come to 388 Atlantic Avenue. In 2 weeks, the aforementioned Cherie Renee Thomas, who just turned traitor by moving to Memphis. She was a New Yorker. Actually, she's a Memphis mm-hmm. native. Mm-hmm. But she was in New York for a number of years, and my friend Carol Cooper, who had been running the reading series, brought in Cherie. And Cherie opened my eyes to a world. In fact, she opened the world's eyes to a world. I will do this rap again in 2 weeks to introduce her. And every time I do that, I love to watch this woman blush. But I believe this, and I don't care, and I see Celeste. I hope you hear that Celeste is nodding. There are maybe five major anthologies that changed the course of science fiction. One of them was the Orbit series in the 50s, the Star series, actually, edited by Fred Pohl. Celeste is writing this down, but you can hear this later. The Star series by Fred Pohl in the 50s. In the 60s, the Orbit series, edited by Damon Knight and Kate Wilhelm. Then, in the late 60s, Dangerous Visions, edited by Harlan Ellison, who took a blend of young new blades and grandmasters and future grandmasters like Delaney of science fiction and got them to write this extraordinarily interesting stuff that helped foment, encapsulated the new wave and helped foment it. Then Pamela Sargent's book, Women of Wonder. Mm-hmm. And then finally, so there's more than five. Then Bruce Sterling did Mirror Shades, which sort of defined cyberpunk. It was over when it started, pretty much. Or as William Gibson said, postmodern is passé. I love that quote of his. And he said that, like, 1984, when cyberpunk was defined by Bruce Sterling, quoting Bill Gibson in, like, 1981.
Okay.
Interestingly, this is the era of AIDS, and interestingly, somehow, that did not yet break the barrier. And it has, but it's still sort of segregated in its way. But, in the year 2000 came the next anthology that changed science fiction. And as far as I'm concerned, there hasn't been one in the last 15 years that comes close. And that is
Dark Matter.
Full title, A Century of... It's a long title. A Century of Speculative Fiction from the African Diaspora. Mm-hmm. I believe I have it correct, but hopefully you get the idea. Now, at that time, I could probably name five, maybe seven black writers of science fiction. Mm-hmm. I was friends with Chip Delaney. Somebody says he's one of the great black writers, and Chip is fairly light-skinned. His mother is white. His father is black. And I remember, please, I was 13 years old. I said, I didn't know you were black, Chip. I've got this little, like, I can feel the womp, the loving womp that he gave me. This wappity-wappity. He said, I didn't know you were Jewish. Fine. And I think we still exchange that occasionally. There's Delaney. There was, of course, Octavia Butler, who had mm-hmm. done the show through the years, including after Dark Matter came out. She was on the show five times, I'm honored to say. I don't remember if I met Nalo Hopkinson before or after. I just remember being at a ReaderCon and seeing this woman and her then-boyfriend, now husband, who's a videographer, hanging out on the grass and holding up her galley of Brown Girl in the Ring.
Yay, yeah.
This woman's never written a bad book in her life. So I could name a very, and I knew a very obscure name, a fellow by the name of Jesse Miller, mm-hmm. who wrote a story called Pigeon City that was about the area of Harlem being walled off. It was walled off by the rest of the world mm-hmm. to keep people in. Mm-hmm. But the people within Pigeon City who communicated with the outside world using mm-hmm. Carrier pigeons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, those were the number of black science fiction writers I knew.
Right.
Enter Dark Matter. Amma Patterson. Celeste Rita Baker. Who knew that Eugene V. Debs had written some science... And Du Bois. Sorry, Du Bois. Yes. Not Debs. Du Bois. Mm-hmm. Who knew that Du Bois had written science fiction? Mm-hmm. I certainly didn't. And I was wiggling his fingers at the microphone, an expert, right? This book changed, is one of those books that changed everything.
Yeah.
Now, you want to argue, okay, Jeff Vandermeer had this book on the weird and that helped encapsulate a new form of weird tales. Yes, I agree that it did. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that it changed the literature, because what I believe Dark Matter did is not only did it define... a century, that's the word I left out, a century mm-hmm. of speculative fiction from right. the black diaspora. So it does really cover that much time,
right.
thereby saying, Jim, you missed all these people mm-hmm. that you should perhaps have known about. But she also got new writers that I hadn't heard of in that book, thereby opening my eyes to a whole... new cultures, a slew of guests, an opening of the world, science fiction, the literature that sees the future and encapsulates everything. Right. Sorry, I know he's a monster, but I can't stop quoting Bill Cosby. Okay, so that was a Bill Cosby right there, an attempt at one. It's a sarcastic... We are only starting to break the Asian barrier now, and that's largely thanks to the workings of Ken Liu,
yeah.
who read in New York at just last 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and who's going to be doing this show. I'm going to be recording him at ReaderCon. That'll be his third time on the show. And so forth. The point is that Cherie's book also told people reading, submit your stories. Get them published. You just keep submitting, you keep doing it, and this is the message that Octavia Butler was giving people. You are going to be rejected, you are going to have heartbreak, because when you write a story, a novel, or whatever, and it is turned down, a little piece of your heart has just been ripped out out of your body and throbbing there. Get used to it. That's really true for most writers, but more so for writers of the African diaspora. See, I almost said African American. It's not. people like Karen Lord. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, is she wonderful. Mm-hmm. I can just gush. Not everybody here is wonderful. I'm just going to name the wonderful one. Okay. Shut up, Jim. You're going to do this again and again and again and again, and you've done it again. But I believe this. This has changed the field. Cherie Renee Thomas will be reading on May 5th at 388 Atlantic Avenue. Admission is free. Donations are... What's the word in Yiddish? We ask for donations at the door because I pay for this. Out of pocket, I pay for this thing, okay? Although, oh my God, did we do well last night?
Good.
We really did. I mean, last year, in this previous season, I've lost like $400. I almost made it all back last night because one of the readers who lives in Manhattan didn't wait for his cab fare. Again, Chip, you will be dealt with. Okay. With Cherie Renee Thomas, a some writer named Nora Jemison. Nora is a genius. Mm-hmm. Nora is a wonderful writer. She has a sixth novel coming out now. She's written five novels. She's gotten five major nominations for those novels. She's gotten a number of nominations for the short stories. She has not yet won. We are not going to be discussing what Nora last night said. You don't want to open kennels and talk about puppies. And she's right. I don't. If I do, it is going to be such a rant that it could be my last show in the year. But
that's right. Want to?
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to happen. It's going to happen during the fundraising drive that starts in May.
Oh.
I have to.
You're going
to
blow, huh?
I'm going to blow.
Yeah.
I have to. I can't not. And because it's not about science fiction, it's about what the Atlantic Monthly called loose democracy.
Loose
democracy. Hmm. The idea that you pay your money to be a member of something and you get to vote on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are swayed by people who they follow rather than just their own good opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, has always been the problem with some of the awards. There are political problems with the Nebula Awards. The other awards are mostly done through juries. There are problems defining awards. Why Jen Brissett's novel Elysium is not nominated for a Philip K. Dick Award is some minor piece of trivial legal nonsense when I'm not going to say whether it should win. It should darned well be nominated and let the judges decide whether it's worthy to win or not. But not being nominated is wrong, wrong, mm-hmm. wrong. Mm-hmm. I had Jen Brissett and Sam Miller on the show before either of them had sold a single story, so I'm very proprietary about that. So anyway, Nora Jemison, regular listeners have heard her on this show any number of times, will continue to hear her on the show any number of times, as long as she is doing. Lester, would you mind opening the door for this guy who looks like he thinks he's a Rasta, but he's posing?
Hi.
You come in and you interrupt everything. Hi, everybody. This is Lister. He does Burn Baby Burn Clappers. And, oh, my God, an hour. I have to let Celeste start talking. Okay. May 5th, Cinco de Mayo.
Mm-hmm.
N.K. Jemison, Cherie Renee Thomas. It's all good. Okay? Next Tuesday. We're not done. This one is Ellen Datlow's fault. I wasn't going to have another reading, but Datlow had a horror writer, well, a writer of dark fiction who she publishes. I have this bio. Can you hear me looking for it? Somewhere in here. Ha! There we go. Robert Sherman.
Mm-hmm.
She mentions, I'm in, where was she? In China. I think she's still there. So Swanwick. I wonder what's been going on in China that Michael Swanwick and Ellen Datlow are both in China. Anyway, I'll have to ask. she said that this guy was coming to the U.S. because he has an off-Broadway play opening. That was a West End hit, and now it's coming to off-Broadway. And did I know a place where he could read? And he's only available for 2 days, 27th and 28th. Ah! The 28th is a Tuesday. Ah! So I booked 388 Atlantic Avenue.
Cool.
So he is next Tuesday. Robert Sherman is a London-based writer of books, radio, television, and the stage. He has written 5 short story collections, and collectively they have won the World Fantasy Award, the Shirley Jackson Award, the Edgehill Readers Prize, and 3 British Fantasy Awards. He was appointed the resident dramatist at Northcote Theatre in Exeter. You know, it's nothing to me, but in England, this is a BFD, okay? And went on to be a regular writer for Alan Ayckbourn, there's a name I know, in Scarborough, and at the Teatro Agora in Rome. His plays have won the Drama Trust Award, the Sophie Winter Memorial Trust Award, and the Guinness Award for Ingenuity. I guess you get a pint if you win that one, in association with the National Theatre, the Royal National Theatre. His dark comedy, Easy Laughter, winner of the Sunday Times Playwriting Award, that's their Sunday Times, not our Sunday Times, receives its New York premiere in April. That's why he's coming here. His interactive series for BBC Radio, The Chain Gang, ran for 3 seasons and won 2 Sony Awards. Okay, sounds good, right? Who cares? This guy writes for Doctor Who, okay? Fanboy just comes out here. He wrote the episode Dalek, which brought back the Daleks to Doctor Who for the first time in 16 years. It's an excellent episode starring Chris Eccleston. It was the 6th episode of the rebooted series. He wrote many of the Doctor Who was off television. Mm-hmm. They were doing their adventures. Mm-hmm. And he's therefore one of the people responsible for the Time Wars in Doctor Who. So he and I are going to have some words. It's going to be a live Hour of the Wolf, which is to say, in the first part, I'm going to interview him and then he's going to read. But because she made this happen, Ellen Datlow's going to have to host.
Okay.
The evil competition with the KGB Fantastic Fiction Reading Series. She's causing me trouble by bringing me great people to read. She's going to host for her efforts.
Okay.
That's free admission next Tuesday. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. at 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. It's practically easier to get to than many places in New York. Even the Long Island Railroad goes there.
Yeah.
There are more trains go there than go to Times Square. That's not an exaggeration. I've counted. So, there. That's our lineup. But 9 years ago, when Cherie Renee Thomas was curating the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, she brought Andrea Hairston and Celeste Rita Baker. What's wrong that Andrea doesn't use her middle name? Anyway. Hi, Celeste.
Hey, Jim.
That was a wonderful reading then, and it's taken a long, long time. I asked you on the air then.
You did? I don't remember that.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Well, I wasn't ready.
You weren't ready, but now you've got Back, Belly, and Side, True Lies and False Tales out from Aqueduct Press.
Yes.
Aqueduct Press,
so
by the way, being one of the coolest. They're basically a feminist publisher.
Yes.
It's the best way to describe them.
Mm-hmm.
And yay.
Yeah. Woo and hoo hoo.
Yeah. All of those.
All
things.
Of that.
Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. I'm very happy.
Time.
Yeah.
Would you call yourself a slow writer? Is that what
definitely.
You
say? Yeah.
Slow. Yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
You craft your work.
I would hope that people think so, but.
I made a. You didn't.
But you know, I'm doing the best I can at the time.
Yeah, I mean, novels are fun. Novels are great.
I haven't gotten to the point where novels are fun.
But my point is, you can walk anywhere in a novel.
Yeah,
you can take people off a track and
yes.
put them into a different adventure
right.
and come back, and the novel continues.
Yeah.
In a short story, every word counts.
Yeah.
And former president of Science Fiction Writers of America, James Gunn, not the guy who directed Guardians of the Galaxy, mm-hmm. James Gunn said, a short story is a polished gem.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always really liked that. He carries the metaphor further mm-hmm. about how it has to be cut just right and finished.
Yeah.
I have to shut up because you're the guest, and I'm just, like, on a roll. I've been doing
it's a good
so
role.
Much. Okay, let me just finish with this.
Yeah.
We had that exhilarating event last night.
Yeah.
I interviewed Michael L.J. Martinez, mm-hmm. Writer, this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. For no wonder you're on a roll.
Yeah. More like a bun, a toasted bun. Doing this wonderful show tonight. Wonderful because you're here if you ever get to speak. Tomorrow at 2 o'clock, I'm going to a prep for the opening of the King's Theater on Flatbush Avenue. Why am I going? Because I'm asked to be one of the speakers to help open the theater.
Oh, nice.
What? WTF? Why?
Yeah.
There are all these celebrities that they could have possibly gotten. I don't know. I said yes. I'll enjoy it. Friday afternoon, I'm doing yet another interview. I've got to get out the Lightspeed podcast and the Nightmare Magazine podcast, where I'm the audio editor mm-hmm. for each and the host for one, mm-hmm. by Monday.
Mm-hmm. So you don't sleep.
Monday night is that King's Theater event. Mm-hmm. And Tuesday night, Rob Sherman. And Wednesday night, my next show.
Uh-huh. I asked you when we first met how you keep this schedule going.
Huh? What? I don't know. I turned 60 a little over a year ago, and I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, but you don't examine it too hard.
Ask me next
week.
Don't
examine it.
Where my eyes will just be gyrating things like out of Roger Rabbit.
Okay, that's scary.
Yeah, well, you should see it from my side. We'll see. I get adrenaline,
mm-hmm.
is the answer.
Okay.
I get adrenaline. Now, none of this stuff makes me any money, but I love what I do. I love being able to meet people like you and Lister and having radio to talk to people and being able to create. I mean, last night's event was so exhilarating.
Mm-hmm.
And the next two are going to be pretty cool.
Right.
The sad question is, how is it that other people can't do this, don't do this? And it's not practical. Thank God I have a partner who, well, and the problem is she's a darned good writer as well, and she's not finding enough time to write. She sold 21 stories.
Very good. But yeah, that's cool, right? Yeah.
She
needs more time. Yeah.
She needs more time.
Yeah.
Yeah. She works for a living for us. On the other hand, I can cook. Can't clean up, but I can cook.
Can't?
Won't?
There you go.
No, can't.
That's right.
Can't is part of it.
No. Truth is the answer.
Oh, no. Yeah. When did you start writing?
I started writing, I would say about 90. About in 1990, I thought that it might be a good idea. And so I was living in the Virgin Islands at the time, and I took a correspondence course on children's writing. And this was before internet, of course, so this was by mail.
Yeah.
So I learned some of the basics, and then, but I didn't think I had the touch for children's writing. I liked the stories, but I didn't want to show them to anybody.
Them?
No. Mm-mm.
You weren't showing them to anybody.
No. So when I just let myself go, I wrote The Dream Price, which is one of the stories that's in this collection. And it, I don't know how I heard about it, but there was some submission opportunity at the Caribbean Writer, which was local to me because it's, you know, it's right there in the Virgin Islands. So at the time, I didn't realize that it was such a respected place. I just thought, you know, well, I'll send it to them. You know, they're right up the street. And they took it. And so that really gave me the bug.
Okay. Why? Okay, no, I won't say why speculative fiction. What were you reading that gave you the bug to be writing speculative fiction and magical realism and all that? That's a term I hate, by the way, magical realism.
You hate that term? I don't know what to
because
tell myself.
Too many people misuse it.
Okay, what do you mean there?
I'm sorry?
What do you mean there?
Oh, there was a time when magical realism was cool. You know, magical realism, Borges and, you know, 100 Years of Solitude and all these great writers. But it became a darling of literary critics. That all of a sudden, if anybody had anything that was even vaguely fantastic in it, like W.P. Kinsella's Shoeless Joe or something like that, it became called magical realism, even though it did not have, it may have had surrealism, it may have had supernatural properties, it may have had, you know, forces at work within them.
Right.
But to me, but it wasn't about, you know, was it the Milagro Beanfield War, which is really great magical realism, or Borges's Tower of Babel.
Okay.
So it's a fine term that was being applied to everything that was speculative fiction.
Well, after you...
I got on a rant.
Yeah, that's cool. After you read some of the stories, then you tell me what you think I should categorize them as.
I have read your stories, and I believe that you write magical realism.
Okay.
I believe that you write speculative.
Do you think there's a better word for it? For me, for my stories?
Yeah. Good stuff.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Now, the novel that I'm working on, I would call speculative, because to me, speculative means what if... in the future. So it's not exactly reality, but it's sort of reality-based, you
that
know?
That is how...
Yeah.
And here's a quiz I ask everybody every week on the show.
Uh-oh.
Who created the term speculative fiction?
I don't know.
And you see, people are always shocked to hear the answer. It was coined in 1946 by Robert A. Heinlein.
Okay.
And people are going, huh?
But why is that a shocker?
Because he really wasn't a spec fic writer. He was.
That doesn't mean he can't figure out the categories of for other things.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We agree.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. But it's just people are like, really?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one who didn't know.
Yeah. Oh. I was shocked when I found it out and. It might have even been Ms. Thomas again who opened that veil for me.
Yeah, she's very well informed.
She's an academic. She's an amazing one.
And an amazing woman.
Yeah. So so it's just a term that has been misused by critics. And you see, you're a writer. And when you apply that to yourself, that's cool, that's good, and I understand it, and I read your fiction, and I would apply that word myself. But there was, say, a critic at the New York Times, who was a science fiction critic, who used that term all the time. I don't like science fiction, but I like magical realism.
Oh.
Go.
Well, there's so many little subgenres under it
ball,
now.
You know?
Yeah.
Go play Tiddlywinks, is what I say to that. But it was a meaningless, fatuous statement. It's like people arguing over where does science fiction begin and fantasy end.
Exactly.
Is Star Wars science fiction or is it fantasy?
Right.
Lucas, by the way, called it science fantasy.
Okay.
Just for the record.
Yeah.
And there was a pulp magazine called Science Fantasy Magazine. It's like, who cares? Damon Knight's definition of science fiction is the one that I use.
What is that then?
Science fiction is what I'm pointing at.
Cool. I like that. Yeah.
So I had a guy on this show sometime who I met, in fact, through Datlow. Forgetting his name for the moment. Came on the air, read a story. Wonderful, brilliant, great story. And took phone calls after that, and somebody called up and said, how is that story in any way, shape, or form speculative or science fiction?
Mm-hmm.
And he thought for a moment. He said, well, maybe it isn't. And I opened my mic and said, did you like the story? And the listener said, oh, yeah, it was great. Thank you. Mission accomplished. Next call, please.
Yeah.
So, on the one hand, it's interesting on an academic basis to discuss this.
Right.
On the other hand, it's also...
irrelevant.
Utterly. And not. It's very interesting, some mm-hmm. of it. I mean, I grew up to read science fiction because I was a boy at, you know, 6 years old. And I was reading Bradbury and Sturgeon. I loved Rocket Jockey stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then somehow in reading Sturgeon and Bradbury, most of Bradbury stuff is really fantasy when you, if you want to apply that.
Mm-hmm. If you're going to be that.
If you're going to do
picking
that.
About it.
That
right.
thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was simply, yeah, it's then I graduated or to Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we can safely say Lord of the Rings is fantasy and it's not science fiction, and that Dune is science fiction and it's not fantasy. But there's this area where they meet, and now people call it interstitial.
Yeah.
Or they call it slipstream. That's another word that's come and gone.
Yeah, I don't like that word.
I don't either. there are certain good writers who don't tell them that you don't like that term. I'll tell you off air. but yeah. So, but what you write are fables of a modern oeuvre
mm-hmm.
that can use things that are outside our common knowledge in order to take a look at who we are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That is up to the reader to decide. I did ask the question, like, how would you categorize it? But that's only really for promotional purposes, for marketing purposes. Like, how do I want to describe my writing to the people that I meet on the street? But,
Well, how do you? You met WBAI station manager last night.
Yeah.
And what did you tell him?
I said magical realism and mimetic. And then I learned or understood that Samuel Delaney prefers mundane. And I'm still playing around with those words, you know? I'm not really sure.
You know,
and I don't know if I have to pin myself down. It might just be whatever comes out of my mouth at the time.
Yeah, exactly. But Chip, let me ask you this. A person who writes, shall we say, realistic fiction.
Yes.
Like Jonathan Franzen.
Mm-hmm.
Would you call his stuff mundane?
Yes, that's why I think mundane is not the right word for me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a word that was thrown about through science fiction fandom for many, many
mm-hmm.
years
mm-hmm.
because we, the science fiction fans,
mm-hmm.
are special.
Yes, I
so
hear you.
Anything that wasn't written for us is therefore mundane.
Right.
The marketers would call it mainstream.
Yes. That's why I sort of liked having a one word for what we call or we are trying now to say used to call mundane or mainstream or literary fiction, you know, because
but
everyone else has to be put into a box except for the default. Okay, don't rant, okay, but you can see the metaphor there, right?
So, absolutely.
So, yeah, let's not shy away from it.
There's a thing about boxes.
Yeah,
I've got to get on the podium just one.
Please go ahead, because
when I started putting together, I put together most of this season at ReaderCon last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of the reading series.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, your turn is coming again, and the at the reading series, you got a book now, and the and. A publicist had gotten in touch with me and said, would you like to have Walter Mosley? To which the answer is, duh. I didn't care if he would come up and read the phone book or just talk. Mosley is an amazing talent. He's a great reader. And and I mentioned this to a particular person who was there last night. He says, oh, I'm walking around ReaderCon. I'm going to have Mosley. And say, oh, great. Are you going to have Chip Delaney with him? No. How about Nora Jemison? No. Nala Hopkinson might be coming into town.
Are we seeing a pattern here?
No. And I got furious. And I said, you want a box? You want a box? I'm going to give you a box. Paul DiFilippo was down the hall. Paul DiFilippo is a science fiction writer who also writes mysteries. Mosley is a mystery writer who also writes science fiction. That's your bleeping box right there. Last night's box, Sam and Sam. I actually have had a box for every reading this year, although I don't know what the one for Sheree and Nora are. I'll have to figure something
out.
Yeah,
you've got to have to work on that. Yeah, you got a couple of weeks.
Well, it was because that was when Sheree was available.
Yes.
And Nora lives here, so she's relatively easy to book. So, actually, there is no box there, darn it. But
you can make one up at science fiction.
Yeah, unless Nora reads a fantasy story.
It doesn't
matter.
And
Sheree's probably going to read poetry. I have no idea what she's going to read. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's Sheree.
That's right.
You know, if she delivers a lecture, an academic lecture, I will be pleased.
That would
as
be
punch.
Fascinating.
Actually,
yeah.
I think I need to send her an email.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and say, yeah, listen to tonight's show. You know.
You might get some ideas about what I want you to do.
Yeah. You brought me Celeste. Now Celeste and I have an idea for you. Anyway.
So I don't know how I got into it. I think...
Who are you reading, though?
You know, I don't remember. I was reading a lot of black women writers because that was... They had just become popular for where it was not as difficult to find books by them.
Yeah.
So,
I think... And this is in the... I only heard this yesterday and understood it. VI?
Yes, was this
I heard
was
you telling
me that.
I'm from the VI, and yes, I'm asking
like,
somebody,
that,
what's
like?
A VI? And after I was slapped silly by about 10 people, it's a Virgin Islands,
yes.
You idiot. Don't look at me that way, Lister.
Well, yeah, that was in St. Thomas, Virgin Islands.
I'm not that educated on this.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't know anything about the VI, you know.
Like, I knew about the Virgin Islands.
Yeah.
I'm horrified every time I hear the politics of how it became, you know.
How it became American.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but is it?
Is it American?
I mean, it's American without any
too
rights.
American.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we don't vote for the president.
Right.
But the rest of the crap we got.
Yeah. You have to put up with the laws, pay the taxes, do this and do that, but your voice...
Even our voice in Congress doesn't count.
That's right, exactly. It's allowed to speak.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's it.
Yeah, don't get me started.
Okay. No, I'll do this. People, go to YouTube, look up John Oliver... And
yes,
Virgin
he did a
Islands.
Good little rant for us.
Was that a wonderful
yes,
rant?
It was so
I
nice.
I thought it went, you know, it was 9 minutes. I thought it would have been better at five. But
I needed my nine.
Whatever. People should see it. It was great.
Yeah.
It was great. Anyway, so there's your rant. It's pre-recorded. It's on YouTube.
Wait. It was nice of him to say that. For us and all of the rest of the American territories. But, you know, we have to speak for ourselves.
Yes, if you're allowed.
Yeah, well, we've been speaking, but nobody listened.
Well, there's that, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, you know, it's nice for him to give us the...
The time of day.
The time of day, yeah.
That's
but,
important.
You know, we're over here yelling and screaming in every field.
So are you, what is your citizenship, if I may ask?
American.
American. Can you vote for president?
Yes. Okay. Now that I live in the continental.
So you're now a New Yorker.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. So now somehow they've decided you're, did you have to get naturalized or anything?
Mm-mm. Because it's wholly owned, just like Puerto Rico. It's wholly at Guam and American Samoa and Northern Mariana. It's owned, literally bought and paid for by the Americans. So we are Americans. We fight in wars. We do all of that stuff. Yeah.
But we
just don't.
Yeah. People don't watch the John Oliver thing, and we'll move on. I want to know who else. Okay, how long is the story you're going to read?
Well, in honor of Earth Day yesterday.
Yes.
Okay.
It's still Earth Day? There are people listening in California right
Good
now.
Thing.
And it's still the 22nd in California.
Okay.
So today is Earth Day.
Okay.
I just decreed that.
Good thing. So I can read single entry for you, which is semi, you can get the connection for Earth Day. That is 6 minutes, approximately. Or...
Yeah, none of these are
extremely
these are all,
long.
These
I have a 6, a 14, tips. And one more I thought of. Oh, this one.
Which one
which
would
is
you
22.
Like to read the most?
I would like to read a single entry for you.
Please, when you are... Okay. No, you don't have to take a break. I can go out and get water for you.
Okay.
While you're reading.
Okay.
So you may start when ready, and then please don't mind... while you're doing that, may I take a photo of you during your reading?
Yes.
Plaster that on Instagram.
Okay.
Okay, so you start reading. I'm going to turn off my mic.
Okay, so this story is called Single Entry. Carnival time come, and I a single entry. I not in any troop or nothing. I just parading in my costume all by myself. Everybody asking me, what song that is, and where my music coming from? I tell them, I write a song, which is true, and it coming from an iPod, and these little speakers ringing me north and south poles, which not true. I projecting the song from my core, but they need to know that. The sun hot, just like I like it, and no clouds dressing the sky. The people is like from before, when people didn't used to be afraid of crowds. All the children them being told to keep still, but they can't, from all the excitement in the air. Grown folks drinking all kind of rum and eating with their fingers, water and ice given way for free to keep people from passing out in the heat. The music blasting, bumping, and blaring so as to make the ground shake. Heart and hips can't help but keep the beat. The groove growing to encompass all of them like wet to cover water. It start to happen when I finish in Post Office Square. That's the big demonstration place. You balance your high with your sober and you do your best dance there. Try to remember your routine if you have one. Impress the judges and give people a good show. Make the camera them like you so the people at home could feel like they bamboucheing with you. Before Post Office Square is the start of Main Street, where it have the old warehouses which make into expensive stores now lining both sides of the street. It's hard for some of the bands and the costumes to pass through because it's so narrow, but I like it because it intensifies the sound and all the colors feel like hot pepper in your eye, so bright. But then when you pass out into the square, the vibes change because it's so big, like swimming from a river into the clean blue sea. I blow up my presence to fill the whole square. Single entry morass. I was everybody and everything. I was the whole friggin' planet. The globe, I'm telling you, the world dancing on 2 feet. Of course, you couldn't self-see my feet, and I no touch the ground. On Main Street, the people then push back to make me pass. Everyone grinding upon one another, his smiles, cheers, and waves. The children hush quiet with awe. The grown folks rushing me, trying to touch, trying to see if me water wet, trying to find the sun, the string between the sun and me, the moon and me. tricolor cloud, what seemed to be above Cruz, could have of the frangipani trees them dripping in old tutu. How I bright where the sun reach and dark when I turn around. You like it, eh? When I reach the square, it's blow, I blow up. Before, I was around 25 feet at the equator, but I was 50 by the time I reached the judge's stand. Old lady stinking toe petals dripping from me stead of sweat. Jasmine petals drifting in me breeze, scenting the whole square. I have volcanoes erupting on the base and trade winds blowing loud like horns. Earthquakes trembling the drums. I's the earth song, you see. I's the earth, and they loving me. The crowd gone wild, they never sees nothing so. The ocean sloshing and rock city really rocking. Cameraman zooming in, capturing a single live guana sunning on Coral Bay. Let them look, they look. We all here. Every tree, rock, stone, and flea. I could dance too, you know. And not only spin, neither. Though me bounce ain't so high and does take quite a while. Every now and again, I does let off some sparks in the air. Stars burning bright. They loving me, and I loving them too. Feeling all the little souls tickling me. And I glad. When time to move on, I shrink down to fit again. Less people here, and they more watching each other than me. I feel in little planes, like a drilling and a cutting and a breaking up. Shrinking faster than I want, and I can't stop at all. Time I pass Joe's bar, I hardly the size of a big car. By senior citizens' viewing stand, I could have fit into a black plastic garbage bag. On the way to the field, the people then clap and smile, but I could tell they seemed too much to pay special mind to me. It's the crowd energy that had let me blow up so, make all my beautiful intricacies flow. Now, only a few people studying me, and I drip in and losing form. Mud sliding, whales beaching. I turn off, and I head back to the parking lot to go have a drink in the village. Well, sir, I can't self-reach the counter. I smaller than a greedy man's dream, and I can't make no arms again, neither. People tripping over me, cussing, and the smaller and smaller I get in. Little boy try pick me up like I was a toy throw away in the gutter. I make thunder. He ain't here. The most I could do is get up some lightning, and he drop me. I roll under a table and hunch up next to a leg. Parade done. Sun gone down. People streaming into the village for last lap, last drink, last dance, last chance to have big fun. Everybody in a frenzy to get and to have, and nobody ain't see me. I hear them talking about me. That single entry, so pretty, so magical, so sure to win. And I did a kick under the bar, huddling in the dark, rum and hot grease dripping down through my mountains. That's it. Thank you.
That's the end. Nice. Good reading.
Thank you. It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. And your voice there, you got that that accent that so many actors, I work with audiobooks.
I love audiobooks.
I beg your pardon. They try to capture that as actors.
Uh-huh.
And many of them do to an extent, but Nalo Hopkinson, whose father was, you know, trained acting and mm-hmm. taught Shakespeare and mm-hmm. stuff like that, and is no and his radio personality used to be one on the CBC,
mm-hmm.
no minor reader she could tell the difference between, you know, she listened to this entire thing on Midnight Robber, one of her novels, and listened to a piece of it. She failed the audition on her own book, which is absurd. And she said, "That's you gave a reading from Trinidad. That's not even the."
Oh yeah, yeah. They can get, you know. It's really very technical. I don't try to be technical, even in my descriptions. I say, like, it's a Caribbean dialect, because dialect changes so much from island to island, and can uh-huh. and from island to island and from part of island to part of island. And, like, people from St. Croix would sound different from people from St. Thomas, you know, and they're all of the Virgin Islands. So you can't, it's very difficult to pin down.
Yeah.
But there are some big generalities that, you know, dialecticians can identify easily.
Yeah. The one that scared me the most, I think, was Karen Lord. When I had her.
I didn't hear her speak. I heard her. I did hear her speaking once, but she was yanking.
I'll send you the recording.
I would love to hear it
on the show.
Yeah. But I love audiobooks too, but I was listening to a certain audiobook. And you know, maybe the term Lyman? Well, the reader said, you know, the guys on the corner were Lyman. Okay?
Oh, no.
I really wanted to finish that book. But I said, you know what? This is something I'm going to have to read. Okay? Because...
I am not a big deal in the audiobook industry, but I'm working for people who are.
Okay.
I do the post-production on Lightspeed Magazine, edited by John Joseph Adams, and the podcasts are produced by these big deals, the people at Skyboat Media.
Okay.
And they take their stuff seriously. And one of my jobs, aside from editing, is the QC, the quality control. Okay? No audiobook should go out. It is so easy today to find out, and you can just type in, pronounce Lyman, and you there's a website called How Just Say, H-O-W-J-S-A-Y. Yeah. How Just Say. There are ones that specialize in people's names. There are ones that specialize in all these languages. You want the definition of a word, the meaning of a word. As I am editing this stuff, very often the actors who don't want to interrupt their flow will give me two or three readings. And then becomes my job, Lyman or Lyman, for example.
Yes, but by the way it's written, you wouldn't, if you assume you know, then you're not going to even challenge it.
I'm going to challenge it if I don't know.
If you see L-I-M-I-N-G, you are going to think you know how to say that?
I've never heard this word in my life.
Okay, good. Well, that's why you have the job you have. And I wish you had been on the job for them.
Lemming? You mean lemming? L-I-M-I-N-G? Lemming.
Yeah. Yes, like what you do to your rum and coke.
You earn a good lemming. You know, I mean, I don't know that word.
Right.
And I know I don't know that word.
Right.
And it's going to take me 15 seconds to Google, well, I'm using a brand name, but come on, to Google it up.
Thank you. It would have been nice.
Sigh.
Yes.
You know, and you know, people, you need, we're very proud. And also working with these people from Skyboat Media, I've graduated from doing the podcasts. I'm still doing the podcasts because they're that much fun. And we won the Hugo Award.
Yeah.
We did. Although that's sort of another story.
let that go. Yeah.
But we're nominated this year anyway on nobody's slate.
Okay.
Thank God. They're not looking at the semi-pro zines, which is what we are. But I've been getting novels or books, actual bona fide audio books, which, and I am so excited because after doing this kind of thing for 40-plus
years... It's a natural slide for you, yeah.
It's nice to be able to actually be doing what I have been doing for all these years professionally.
You mean like they're going to pay you?
Yeah. And by the way, well.
Right on.
It's like the first time I've ever gotten paid well. Well, outside of a theater thing I did some years ago, 30 years ago.
That money must be ran out by now, huh?
It did. It did, but 10 years. Yes. That show, I worked on a theater project that made me a very good lemming. Thank you very much. Leicester. Anyway. Geez. Okay. We have a little time still. But yeah, so now what I do here on Hour of the Wolf and is mostly unique. There are a few other people that do this. But what I specialize in, and if I ever get to start like my own audiobook company, I want to hear the writers speak. I want to hear the writers' words. Not all writers are great readers. Understood. One person who read last night read way too fast. Another person could have used, on a different occasion, not last night, a little steering as to what selections to read. Don't leave people hanging. Stuff like that. But when you get one of your favorite people, Richard Bowes, in here, reading his own stuff, Rick can get a little bit modest about his own writing, and because it's something that he wrote, he's not selling it. And on one of his best stories, Hole in the City, I said, Rick, pretend that this story was written by one of his favorite writers.
Uh-huh. That's a good
case,
trick.
Jeff Ford. And all of a sudden, he was selling
every word.
But the writing, the voice, was still the voice of Rick's characters from Rick's mouth. Mm-hmm. And as we were hearing your voice, there may be better actors out there, but they're not going to have that story better than you just read it.
Thank you.
And there are some people who can't do it. Okay, so be it. But many can. And so I like the writer's voice, which is the only other person who gets to narrate. The word used to be to read stories on the air. It's now narrate stories on this show is me.
Okay.
Because I used to do that a whole lot, and I stopped doing it for good legal reasons. Okay, very briefly.
Mm-hmm.
When this show's on 5 to 7 a.m., blah, 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 it's 5 a.m., I'm reading a short story, it's live on the air, it goes out through the ether, and outside of the air check that I make of the show, it's done. It's in the ether, it's over. I think the legal word for it was a transient broadcast.
Okay.
It is gone.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Fine. Now there's the internet.
Everything is forever.
Everything is forever. If I read a story, and then I wasn't calling up every writer and getting permission for the copyright. I would say that comes from this writer's book that just that's in print from Ace Books, or it's out of print, it's in the library, but you need to buy everything this author wrote. I took the conceit that I was promoting people. Mm-hmm. It's not legal, but it was mine, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But when the internet changed it all, the fact that the internet is forever.
Mm-hmm.
So now if I was to read a story on the air, I'm really ripping the writer off. And people are going to, and here's an important word, when they download it and listen to it, it will be a copy. They listen to it live on the air, it's broadcast, streaming.
Right.
There is no streaming right. There is, however, a copyright.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've stopped reading stories on the air unless I have explicit permission.
Understood.
From the writer of the writer's estate. But there are any number that I still get such permission from, usually the estates.
Mm.
But also for that reason, it gives me more excuse to have more writers come in and do it themselves.
Yeah.
And that was very satisfying. Thank you.
It was fun. I'm glad that you had me here to do it.
Yeah, well, and it won't be the last time now that we have a volume of stories. Now, how would you describe this? So Aqueduct has promoted Back, Belly, and Side, True Lies and False Tales by Celeste Rita Baker as a... You have to repeat this stuff. As conversation pieces.
That is the title of...
A series,
of which I'm well into the 40s. I think I'm number 45 of 46 of this series.
It's bigger than a chapbook, smaller than a full collection of stories.
Okay.
I would think. I think of chapbooks as being smaller.
I'm really not clear on chapbooks.
Yeah. I know Theodora Goss puts out chapbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And so does Michael Swanwick, handmade, hand sew. Both of them actually sew.
Like the one that Cherie did, Scarab.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Of which I am in also.
Oh, far out. Yeah. I haven't seen that, but yeah.
I'll show you mine, but you can't touch it.
Okay. No. But, I mean, these things are all works of art. It's not just the
work
side.
It is, yes.
The embodiment.
Yes, it's beautiful.
Yeah. If you being a listener, would like to call up and speak with Celeste Rita Baker on topic, the telephone number here, I don't practice free speech. You're off topic, you're off the air. 212-209-2950. Celeste, you will need those headphones in order to hear listeners. And if you can find phones, actually, there's another pair right over here. And indeed, the calls. Why is everything sounding? Because I had my headphone volume down. That'll do it. That'll do it. Okay. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Good morning.
It had to be you.
Okay. I think I like you very much. I'm sorry for my voice.
Sorry for your voice, too, Robert.
Yes.
This is a CCNY professor, former CCNY professor, so I get to diss him.
Anyway, I think I like you a lot, ma'am, because you have three names. No, somebody with three names says something to me. There's an oomph in there someplace. Anyway, I want to thank you for mentioning Guam and the Northern Marianas. Very few people know about that. Mm-hmm. Some of
it's
us
true.
Do.
It's true, yeah.
Enough said. Let me ask you a couple of questions. If somebody called you a modern fabulist, would you object?
Ooh, no, that's not... I wouldn't. It's not my place to say.
A fabulist is a teller of fables.
Yeah.
That's the technical term.
I would not object.
You are a teller of fables.
Okay, that's a good one.
Now,
I'll
I'm
going to
ask you a question, but before that, I'm going to give you a compliment. I am attracted by voices for a number of reasons.
Butter, by the way, is on the diet tonight.
What is? Anyway.
Schmaltz.
Many years ago, I met a woman at a fabulous festival, and your voice reminds me very much of her. Her name is was Louise Bennett.
Oh.
You may have heard of her.
You think?
Ms. Lou.
Uh-huh.
She is and was and always will be Jamaican folklore.
Mm-hmm.
And she told the most incredible version of why all stories belong to Anansi,
mm-hmm.
which is a story from the African diaspora, mm-hmm. which has been found in West Africa,
mm-hmm.
in the United States South, in Jamaica, all over the Caribbean, versions in Mexico, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to tell you.
And even usurped by Neil Gaiman.
Yes. Although some people didn't like Anansi boys too much.
I might be one. I liked it. It just was let down after American
Gods. Well, it wasn't
as
good as American Gods. I'll agree with that. But then nothing was as good as American Gods. Mm. Okay, let me ask you a question. By the way, your name is Celeste Rita Baker or Rita Celeste Baker? I got confused.
Celeste Rita Baker.
Ah, good. In your stories, Celeste Rita Baker, have you ever used...
Try Celeste.
Celeste. Have you ever used or researched Caribbean folklore? Or traditions from the Caribbean in your stories?
Yes, but I wouldn't say that I use them. They are, part of my DNA and something that you grow up hearing and you read about in the book. They're the books around you. But to say that I use them to, extrapolate a certain part and put it into a story, no, I don't write like that.
But you did hear traditions growing up in the Virgin Islands.
Yeah.
Yes, it would be interesting to examine the supernatural.
We had an issue when Karen Lord was on the show taking mm-hmm. phone calls, and she read this a piece of her first novel on the air, and somebody said, "Isn't it wonderful how you have this Caribbean folklore in there?" And she said, "That was African."
Yeah.
I don't think it was...
People know where she's from and hear the accent. Karen Lord is something else. She's
I would never say anything like that, especially...
She's got rings,
And she is a very, very good reader.
Yes, but we only have a couple of
minutes. Okay, yes, well, anyway, thank you very much for coming on and reading your modern fable. And you are a fabulous. And I think Ms. Lou...
Fabulous.
And I think all the storytellers and raconteurs and narratologists down your way would be very proud of you.
Thank you so much. I'm glad that you liked what you heard.
Thank you for being on the show.
Okay.
Likewise. Telephone number here at WBAI. And you see, at this hour, unfortunately, the calls dwindle. You know, it's almost 3 a.m. in New York City. But, hey, come on. People Skype in. You know, it's the middle of the day in the other side of the world. And I've said that, and I've gotten calls from the other side of the world. It does happen. Although most of those people listen to it on delay anyway. They listen to the podcast. But the telephone number here in New York is 212-209-2900. And... I should just reintroduce, which will also outroduce the show, which is that this is Hour of the Wolf over WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org. And my guest this morning is Celeste Rita Baker. My name is Jim Freund, and Celeste's new book, it's also first book, but new book, is Back, Belly, and Side, True Lies and False Tales, published by Aqueduct Press. And if you liked what you heard, that's but a lovely, lovely appetizer, gateway to the other stories, I would say, for that matter. And yes, appropriate for Earth Day, I think.
Appropriate for Earth Day.
Absolutely.
Some of the stories are in dialect, and some of them are in standard English. So there is a big variety in these 13 stories. And I was really surprised that Aqueduct took this project on because it's so eclectic.
Oh, but I think they like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Aqueduct, I've never met the editor. I would like to. And I think she's usually at ReaderCon, so I've probably met her and not known it. But I'm just always constantly impressed
by what they put out. Yes,
absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. You know, like Elysium.
Like Elysium, exactly. From Jen Brissett, Jennifer Marie.
That's
now,
right.
Now that she's been on the show, she must use three names.
That's right.
So it's Jennifer Marie Brissett, the wonderful Jennifer Marie Brissett. And that's a great novel. And but, well, they just put out a lot of fine books.
Yes, yes.
And I'm constantly amazed when I like a particular writer and it's like Aqueduct. Of course it is. Of course it is.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. I guess, and I guess it also says something about my taste.
Yes.
In books, that it turns out that I'm going that way.
Right.
Which is not to say that I don't still like the rocket jockey stuff.
Yes. Well, there's room for everyone.
There is. There absolutely is. That's supposed to be.
That is the point. That is the point.
That's precisely the point of... A spec fic is supposed to open people's eyes to ideas, thoughts, and places they have not yet been to. Which is why it's so horrifying when you find people that are, in essence, trying to limit it.
Yes.
And block it down.
Yes.
And this is something I've said many times through the years. And... I'm going to have to do this rant in the future on the air because listeners probably don't know from this, but it's actually flowing into the major media that a popular vote is the nominating process has been politicized. And people are up in arms about what to do about this.
Yes.
And I'm going to go on a rant at some point during May. During the fundraising drive.
Well, ranting will be necessary and helpful, but you can't stop time.
I have no intention of...
Not you, but time cannot be stopped.
That's
right.
That's right. So. And as I introduced... as I will be introducing Cherie and Nora, mm-hmm. And also last night, Chip Delaney and Sam Miller, I said, and it's a fact, these are the people that are the future of science fiction.
Yeah, that was a mighty bold statement.
I didn't think so. I thought it was a simple fact.
You noticed how quiet the room was?
Yeah.
Yeah, I cheered, but I noticed that my voice was the loudest and the onlyest.
Yeah, that's true. That was true. Yeah, but... And to every...
And this is New York City.
This is New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what, people?
Guess what?
Face it, folks.
Mm-hmm.
This is it. This is where it is.
This is where we're at.
And what I am hoping is that it's only going to go further. I think Ken Liu is opening some doors, mm-hmm. and some other cultures and writers.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not interested in other cultures and other ways of thinking, why would you be reading speculative fiction?
Go back to mundane.
Yeah. And that's where the word mundane applies.
That's what I thought.
It really does. Mm-hmm. It really does. Chip was right,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to that. The least mundane person I've ever met. Celeste, I'm sorry I spent so much time...
You can take six.
Talking at you. Yeah, but the oh, my God. It's
thank you.
58.
Oh, thank you.
Jim.
Yes.
My request. I'm requesting the 14-minute piece. I'd love to hear it, if you don't mind.
You're asking me? You're not asking
show.
Me if I would do
it's,
it.
It's
you know,
his
of
show.
Of course I would do it.
But sure. If you're going to talk, Lister, you have to get a microphone before crying out loud. Okay, otherwise people are just going... That's really... Well... I was going to say that's really communicative, but then that's WBAI.
I'm too busy, like, I'm sorry.
Is that something you would care to do?
Okay, well, let me ask you.
But before you do that,
mm-hmm.
because, you see, the internet feed cuts off at 3,
mm-hmm.
then people can hear Burn Baby Burn Clapper and hear it, but if they're tuning in for Hour of the Wolf, it cuts off at 3.
Mm-hmm.
So let me say... that this has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. And if you want to hear the continuation of this show, you will find the archive for Burn Baby Burn Clapper with Lister. Do they list your entire moniker or just Lister? On
whatever.
You and I are going to have a talk, okay? I have to chide you. You know the new things that if you don't do this and that, you don't get archived?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you aware of the fact that you've got a 3-hour show coming up?
Yeah.
You are?
I did.
Yeah, you see? we have to talk.
Okay, no problem.
We have to. I think it's May 12th. You're on midnight to 3, according to the schedule.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. You know, I'm on the 5th.
Okay.
From midnight to 3, and then you're on the 12th, midnight to 3. That you should... read the memo.
Okay.
This is Burn Baby Burn Clapper. My name is Lister. Oh, no. Does that mean I have to play your theme now? I can't even begin to understand. I think if I did understand the words of that theme, I'd be taken off the air.
Just hum it. It's safer.
I don't know. When you play this guy... does not play the music that I normally listen to, but when you hear a ska version of For the Benefit of Mr. Kite, that's the first time I heard your show. I heard that, and I could not turn it off. It's just too wonderful and too fascinating a thing. We were having a talk at a brief meal about how I view certain kinds of music more as poetry sound jet than just as music. But then when you take some of the stuff you play, that just blows away my theory. You're a problem. You're a problem, Lister. And thank God for that.
That's what my mother said.
Celeste, you had another story that Lister would like on his show.
Lister, this story is in, what do you call it? Caribbean, no, standard English. And it is not supernatural, sci-fi, fabulous, whatever. It's a regular story.
Oh, my God.
You want to hear it?
Okay.
This story is called Now I Got Girl. Fitting into the costume wasn't hard. Making myself believe I looked sexy as a construction paper and felt sunflower was hard. Sunshine and flowers ain't my thing. I prefer mood lighting. Strobe lights look good in my hair. My natural setting is behind a bar where I get to use my fast hands and slow smile. I'd rather have bad sex in the back of a raggedy Corolla than get out of bed before 3. But I was doing it for girl, of course. I got girl like this. About a year ago, I was strolling home. The moon was practically at eye level, so I knew it was about 4:10. Teetering just a little in my blue thigh highs with the 7-inch heels. Mine in the gutter head in the clouds. And there she was, right in the middle of the sidewalk, like one of those orange danger cones. At first, I thought she was a gargoyle. The man I just left looked a little like a gargoyle himself, and with my head not right, I thought this was his little gargoyle left child. She was so still, she could have been a statue that fell off a building and forgot to break. But her crying hit the kind of high notes that sent arrows straight through my eyeballs. I looked around, see who was tending to this, but no one was paying her any mind. I just passed the regular block watches, and they'd acted like they didn't see her. They'd been there all day and all night, so I knew they knew something. Maybe she pitched a fit and is crying it out. Can't have any more candy or whatever girls cry over. I just walk on, minding my own business. I don't like children, the sneaky little beasts. So I kept an eye on her the way you would watch a rabid dog. Nice doggy, stay back. I gave up plenty of room. I was practically in the street. Then the little pit bull, and that's exactly what she looked like, with a wide, fat face and ears set way up high on her head. She springs up from the sidewalk like a splash from a puddle and clamps herself to my hips. It ain't the first time my hips been clamped. I've had men who use their hands for a living clamp onto me, and I can buck them off in 2 shakes if I want to. But this little clump snatcher had a grip like a lug wrench. I tried to stomp her feet with my stilettos, but it wasn't easy. My teeny-weeny purse came down on her head at least 3-4 times, but it only rebounded and hit me in the titties. I really didn't want to touch her at all. Who knew what kind of chiggers she had? But I got one hand around the back of her skinny little neck and tried to yank her head off. All that did was force her snotty face off my white sequined hot pants, leaving a shiny string of spit from her lips to my hips. "What's the matter with you?" I shrieked. "What you think you're doing? Get off of me." She looked about 4, braid extensions hanging all down her back, little orange halter top, pink shorts, cheap green high-heeled sandals, very inappropriate, covered in goosebumps, wailing like a banshee. I looked back at the men on the corner, men I'd just passed every night, deadpan faces, not seeing or hearing a thing. "Hey, Looney," I yelled, louder even than the little creature. "Looney, Spike, Michael, get this thing off of me. Whose is this?" They all looked at me, but that's all they did. Any other time, they'd have been all up in it happening. They got my back normally, but this time, they acting like I gotta handle the little street urchin myself. Guess they thought it'd be no problem for me to dropkick the little animal, or something. I turned around and tried walking. I couldn't punt her away. Her body center was too high and too close. Maybe a roundhouse would send her flying, but me too. I was determined to lose the little carpetbagger before I got to my building. "I have to go to the bathroom," she said, clear as Bobby Blue Bland. Then she started bellowing again, along the lines of James Brown. "So, go home," I screamed, kind of in the Patti LaBelle hysteria vein. "I really have to go bad." By this time, I'm out of breath. Felt like I was fighting the devil's granddaughter. I turned the corner of my block, cutting it close to the filthy bricks, hoping to scrape her off. But she swung around me like a lasso twirling around a horse's neck. "Where's your mother?" I asked. "These things have mothers, don't they? They ain't supposed to be walking around at the crack of dawn accosting people. Where do you live?" That's when she chose to shut up. Just whimpered and wiped her nasty face on my dry clean only pants. Threw her big head all the way back and looked up at me. Her jaw hung open like it was unhinged. Looked like a bird waiting on a worm. "Oh, God," I thought. "Suppose the little squirt's lost. All kinds of bad things happen to kids. I barely escaped myself. My grandfather raised me. Well, sort of. He took me from my mother and I lived with him. We ate together, and he smiled at me at least once a day, so that was okay." Mama's brain didn't sit right in her head. There were plenty of days and nights when I'd hear Grandpa chasing her from around our door. "Some folks, be they kin or not," he'd said, "just don't mean you no damn good, whether they want to or not." I should turn around and take her straight to the police, I thought. And there they were. Squad car had rolled up on us, quiet as a hearse. Little bit slid behind me like a shadow, and I clean forgot that I could have been glad to see them. We both froze, trying to be invisible until they were gone. "Okay, now," I said, pulling myself together and snatching her around in front of me. "How'd you get here? Where are you supposed to be?" Again, she didn't answer, but she took a few of those shuddering deep breaths, and I knew that she was going to let loose with another set of bawling, and all kinds of pains would knock me to my knees. So I did the only thing I could. I flung myself against the wall of the building, too fast for the little brat, knocked the wind right out of her. I took a couple of steps. "I really gotta go bad," she said, and almost pulled my pants off as she latched onto me again. "Oh, no, it's starting to come out." "You better not," I screamed and tried to pry her off like a scab. "Pee in the street. What do I care?" "I can't," she screamed back. "I'm a lady." She started doing the pee-pee dance in the elevator. Worked into the Watusi while I was unlocking my door and was damn near doing the Philly dog by the time I pointed down the hall. She went first. She was quick, I'll say that for her, and didn't leave a mess. Had washed her hands and rinsed off the soap and didn't use my towel. When I came out, the kid was standing in the hall looking around at my apartment, which is nice, even if I say so myself. I got lots of plants and good windows and a music is my life stereo. I got a white rug, too, which I'm glad she ain't standing on. Not that she's dirty. I can see now that she ain't dirty. Even those long fake braids, which I think are too grown up for little girls, not to mention bad for the ego, are fresh and neat. Child got on pink nail polish, I see, as one hand goes up to play with her ear and she shoves her other thumb in her mouth. I went to the kitchen to get a drink, and she followed me, those ridiculous plastic heels making more noise than mine. Beer in hand, I went back to the door and opened it wide. "Out," I said. "Go back where you came from. Out, out, out." She made a move like she was going, but it was just a feint because she launched herself at me like a torpedo, and we both fell to the floor. She was crying, and I was cussing. She didn't know who she was, not really. Said her name was Chardonnay, and her mother's name was Keisha. They used to live in a big building, not around here, but her mother told her they didn't live there no more, and now she don't know where she lived. Phone number was 462. Last name, Alizé. Chardonnay Alizé. Uh-huh. "Grandmother?" "You mean Annabelle?" she said. "Keisha, mother? She don't like me. She don't like Keisha neither." "Of course she likes you." "No, she don't," she said, talking around her thumb. "She told me. Told Keisha she should have got rid of me. Told Keisha she don't care where we go. Just get out of her face." I had another beer to steel myself for calling the police. I didn't know what else to do. Lost and found for the police is the people, right? That's backwards. Lost and found for the people is the police, right? So that's who I had to call. I ain't done nothing wrong. What I got to be scared of? Still, I was shaking so much I could hardly see the numbers on the stupid little phone. The girl was standing in front of me watching my every move. Her knees were buckling, she was so tired. But I refused to tell her to sit down. When I got through to them, they didn't give me a hard time, but they didn't give a damn neither. Not that I cared, but they were supposed to act like it. They said, call Administration for Children's Services. They said they'd come and get her, but they wouldn't say when. First, they wanted to know all about me. What's my middle name? What's my Social Security number? Where did I work? Well, what's my phone number? My cell phone number? Was I on welfare, food stamp? Wasn't about me. That pissed me off. Child in trouble, they supposed to be on it. Faster than a speeding bullet. I even called animal control. They came right away, but they wouldn't take her. I fell asleep with the phone in my hand. When I woke up, girl was curled up on my lap. I gotta take those damn braids out, I thought. Wait, what? We went looking for Looney right away. He told me that Keisha dropped girl off a little before I got there. Said she stopped by on her way to Greensboro, she said, with some guy in a 1966 brown and cream V8 Thunderbird. Told him Chardonnay was his daughter and he could have her. Looney said, could be true, but hell, this the first he heard of it. He patted her on the head like a puppy. I thought he was going to scratch her behind the ears. We went back upstairs. I had rum in my coffee. She had scrambled eggs and milk. Grandpa had put rum in his coffee when he was talking himself into something or out of something. When he was finished,